and he's immediately face to face with her. This is Elise. And instinctively, he wants to flee, but her dark beauty overpowers him and he can't move.
I mean, just take a look at her.
Take a leg. Are you a zombie or are you post nut clarity, man?
I don't know what I am. I'm confused.
I am sick. Welcome to Casuals of Runeterra, episode 145. I'm your host, Ryan, here with your other host, Hedge.
And, you know, disclaimer up here at the top of the episode, this is going to be an episode where I will make an absolute simping fool of myself.
Oh, goddamn it.
So, you know, if that is not content you are signing up for, feel free to turn it off. I won't judge you. I deserve to be judged, but, you know, just heads up.
I forgot who I'm dealing with. Because this story is just Hedge getting murdered. Yeah.
I'm a man of culture, damn it.
Up top, housekeeping. You can listen to us everywhere. Visit us at podcastcore.com. Remember, that's C-O-R for all of our info. Email us at podcastcore@gmail.com. Follow us on all the platforms because that helps with discoverability. We don't have sponsors, so we appreciate it. Leave a like and a comment on whatever platform you listen on. But the easiest way, word of mouth, tell a friend to become wary when something is too good to be true by listening to the Casuals of Runeterra podcast.
And that's just good advice altogether. Like, do not fall for any phishing scams. Don't answer the scam calls.
Are you calling me out?
If it seems too good to be true, it probably is. All right. Like, that's just good advice. But Elise is not too good to be true. She's just exactly what I want.
A story's best told in three parts. We'll start with part one of Strand by Silken Strand. So we start with Marcus, a Noxian man, gets off a ship, and he's in this dark, damp, gloomy land. We know this to be somewhere near the Shadow Isles. And there's sounds of creatures skittering around, filling the air, as well as like musk and, you know, dank stuff. And Marcus is imagining them that, oh, these are the same rats from the ship, right? No big deal. So he and many other devotees, so he's not alone, are just gathered here in this dark place where she waits.
And all the jokes aside, I mean, I would totally be walking with them. I would be a sap just like them. But like, if you go and read through this story, like the way that the environment is written, it does a really good job as far as like helping you paint a mental picture.
Oh, yeah.
Of what this island looks like. And like, I'm just going to read like a quick little shorty here. So, soft light shimmered between the trees, dancing like the corpse candles that flickered over marshland and drew unwary souls to their doom. The branches were hung with what looked like canopies of ragged muslin, and it took Marcus a moment to realize they were swaths of cobwebs. Why would you keep going any further? I'd get back on the boat. This is not a place for life. This is not a place where living beings should be. And these guys just keep going forward because they're infatuated with Elise. And I get it. But there's also
Yeah, Hedge brought it up, so I want to mention, because the way this is, if you read this, you'll be like, holy shit, the way the environments are depicted, the way the situation is painted, the way it's written is so elegant for such a simple, straightforward story. It's because it's Graham McNeil.
Oh, God. And we love our Graham McNeil on this show, baby. God, I love Graham McNeil. He's so good at what he does.
Once again, another Warhammer head. So definitely read this one, because we won't do it justice with our style here. We'll do our best, but he paints environments very well and elegantly. Concisely as well. But up ahead, this guy sees a flash of crimson silk and swaying hips. We know who that is. And he remembers the exciting sermon. So it's not really a flashback, but he remembers the exciting sermon about her ancient god. And that's why choosing to join her on her pilgrimage was such an enticing thing, him and these other guys. And now that he's so far from Noxus, where she gave the sermon, he's starting to have some pause.
It's arguably just like way too late at this point. Like, you shouldn't have gotten on the boat in the first place.
Weeks on a ship.
But at the very least, you know, I would have just taken one look at this island and been like, yeah, no, this is a big no for me, dog. I'm just going to chill on the boat until you guys are done. All right. Like, y'all take me home when this is over.
We'll
get deeper into the story and like, it's not going. It wouldn't be an option, but it's the option I would take.
No,
but
I was going to say post-nut clarity is the most important in these situations, right? When you're going to get on a boat for weeks to go to a chick's house, you fucked up, dog. With a bunch of other dudes.
hey, like you're saying that, but this is we are pre-nut clarity right now. Yeah. So right now we're just all chilling like in our racks, high-fiving each other, like, yo, this is gonna be lit.
Oh man. So this moves to part two, and the others are kind of like these unthinking zombies, and they continue deeper into this darkness. And Marcus, you know, with now this doubt, turns around and he's immediately face to face with her. This is Elise. And instinctively, he wants to flee, but her dark beauty overpowers him and he can't move.
I mean, just take a look at her. Oh, I get it.
Take a leg. Are you a zombie or are you post-nut clarity, man?
I don't know what I am. I'm confused.
I am sick. Help me.
I'm confused. I need help.
So
all I know is I'm aroused.
So we have a quote here I'm going to read through because it gives us our description of Elise in her human form. So Marcus, she said, the sound of his name on her lips was divine, sending a surge of pleasure down his spine. Her beauty transfixed him, and he savored every detail of her perfect form. Her features were angular and sharp, framed by lustrous crimson hair like that of a high-born girl he once knew. So if you have redheads out there, high-born status.
Yes, ma'am.
Full lips and eyes of dark radiance drew him deeper into her web with the promise of raptures yet to come. A cloak of sable secured by an 8-pronged brooch mantled her rounded shoulders. It rippled with motion, though there was no wind to stir it.
Oh, whatever kind of motion could it be that's rippling this? Who knows? It can't be any. It can't be other limbs. Elise's bipedal.
So after this quote, she checks if something's wrong, and the thought of displeasing her suddenly made him panic. So it's crazy because like he's having a panic attack. But then she's able to create with her beauty another panic attack that beats that one out. And he immediately drops to his knees and wraps his arms around her and promises to do anything for her. And she looks down at him and smiles.
Yeah. So my joking aside, like we do get to see here as far as that there is definitely some kind of magic going on.
Yeah.
Which we do know as far as from Elise's bio and what led to her becoming the creature that she is now, that there is a lot of magics involved in it, and she does have some control over it, which makes sense. You got to be able to lure creatures into your web, where like some, like in the real world, some spiders do have like some pheromones that they can mimic, like for different scents to lure prey into their traps. But for the most part, they just kind of put it in high traffic areas and catch stuff that way. This is not a high traffic area. This is weeks ship travel away from Noxus. So she's gotta have something to bring them in. And there's two things at work: a little bit of magic and sex sells, baby.
Yep. ever true. So then he follows her up a path to the cave at the base of a cliff, and she invites him inside, and he's unable to resist. And this takes us to part three.
And oh boy, like, and once we get into this cave, this is where we start getting the all of the Warhammer feels here. Yeah. So strap in, boys. We're going for a ride.
All right, part three. So we're now inside the cave, and it's unnaturally dark and warm, which I don't... I mean, by cave definition, I feel like that's cave. Cave is, our cave, yeah, is, I think that's cold, just cave. I guess. Like, it wouldn't be colder than outside. That's the point of a cave.
I mean, it depends on, like, the area that you're in. Like, caves tend to have, like, a more controlled environment.
Yeah.
So, like, if it's really hot outside, the cave will be cooler. Whereas if it's really cool outside, the cave will be warmer because, like, it's... like there's just the amount of like earth and sediment in there. It creates a controlled environment. But again, I agree. This just is kind of like cave, right? Like, especially if you're coming in from like super winds and stuff, cause like islands are always windy.
Yeah.
So it's going to feel warmer. Like once the wind's not touching you. It's the other descriptors of this cave though, that make me go, okay, that's not, you want to go ahead nice. And do- Yeah. I gotcha. So because it's like, yeah, like the cave is warm, but that's just cave. But then there's a clammy fever heat that reeked like offal swept from a butcher's block.
Oh my gosh.
And then a little deeper in, a droplet from somewhere high above landed on Marcus's cheek, and he flinched at the sudden burning pain of it. He looked up at the cavern roof, seeing pale, grub-like shapes hanging overhead and swaying with frantic, trapped motion. In the translucent surface of the fresh-spun web, a human face screamed in mute horror against the suffocating silken net. So yeah, now that's not like a cave. That's not cave behavior.
True. One other feature that I like about from the beginning to the end of the story, and this is just Graham McNeil being a boss, very similar like how Joe Abercrombie does his descriptions of environments. From the moment he gets off the ship, every progressive step towards this cave is darker. Like it's like a fading or a gradient up into the cave. That even once inside the cave, he mentions it's unnaturally dark in this cave. It's like the island or this part of the island is shrouded.
Yeah, and I do appreciate as far as like with that gradient change, because that also plays a lot into like just behavior, like animal behaviors of triggering your fight or flight, right? Because like if it was like, you know, you get off the boat and it's an immediate like ramp into this cave, like I doubt that even Elise would have the ability to keep all of her cattle in line at that point, right? Because it's too fast of a jolt. It's going to trigger the fight or flight before everything kind of like jumps ahead. And you'll hear this with especially like classically trained French chefs. Okay. If they're like working with live, like with live creatures, specifically things that can jump. But like they'll even tell you that like to start, like if you're going to boil it, you start it in cold water and you turn the heat on.
Yeah.
Especially for like when you're making frogs, like you start cold and then work your way up, because the frogs will adapt to the heat until it becomes too hot for them to adapt to it. But it's too late at that point.
Jesus.
Yeah. So like that's
we were the monsters all along.
We were the monsters all along. 100%.
Oh my gosh. So our buddy Marcus here, after all seeing all this, he's still like, hey, what is this place, you idiot? And she tells Marcus, don't worry, it's my temple. It's the lair of the Spider Queen. That's the goddess or the god that he's expecting to interact with at some level, right? From the sermons. So then she undoes her brooch, kinky, her cloak falls.
Yes.
And then spider limbs appear. And she begins to transform into that terrifying form we know so well from the damn game. And Marcus is like, oh, fuck.
All I have to say about Marcus at this from this point onward is coward. All right, because like once we actually get to see the spider form, I'm all in, baby. Like that's what I want. I don't want some normal looking high born redheaded lady. I want somebody that's gonna stab me with some chitinous legs.
And stabby she does. So he immediately now turns and runs from this monster. And she chases him and shoots out some webs to slow his movement. And as he's running and he's slowly getting caught in these webs, he feels a slight prick. And suddenly he's frozen because the venom is seeping through his body. And previously, during his analysis phase, when he was looking at things, there was a steer man that it was a hooded figure moving along in the distance. And he wasn't quite sure who this was because it was somebody outside of Elise and the men that came with him. And now the same figure is standing over him, looming over him. And the hood pulls back and collapses into 1,000 spiders and they fall all over him. Now I laughed because despite how terrifying this is, I immediately thought of, you know, your three kids in a trench coat. Like, but a bunch of spiders is like nightmare fuel.
Yeah. Hey, like for me, it was like, I laughed as well, but not because of like the trench coat look. It's because of, you know, like I mentioned earlier, Warhammer. And this is the most Warhammer that it gets, especially if you like following Zerg stuff. I forget the name of the short story from Warhammer, and now I'm gonna look and see if it's the same author.
Yeah,
because I mean, I love Greg McNeil, and like if I didn't notice that this story was written by Greg McNeil, then it's even funnier to me now because there's a short story in Warhammer where a high fleet ends up swallowing a substation. It's a White Scar substation. So then like the end of the short story is they get a message out of like, hey, there's a high fleet on the way. And right before they get when they get the message out right after that, it's like everything goes dark. And it's because one of the fleets just eats the entire substation, which is akin to like eating a moon, right? And so then like it from that point on, it is just describing all of the awful ways that everyone on the substation dies. And so like it involves like little tiny Zergs like falling on these guys and just eating them alive and stuff. And that's basically what happens to Marcus here. So that's like
exactly what happens. Trigger warning if you don't like spiders. But they fall on him and they crawl into every hole he has and they begin eating him from the inside and doing things. And just like, it's terrifying. And as he's, you know, dying, Elise tells him, you have to die now, Marcus. And in his dying breath, he says, why? And she smiles and says, so that I can live. And that those type of one-liners you have to earn. And once again, because of the author of this story and the way it's told, it's earned and that line hits. That's where we leave off. A little bit of a throwback to Elise. I mean, that was like episode 3, I think we did, if you're an OG. It's been a while since we've gone back to visit her. And if you've listened to our update episode, that's kind of part of our plan with the changes with Legends of Runeterra is we want to go back and grab some of these stuff that we haven't done in years, right? We haven't talked about in years. We probably made a promise back then, but don't give into our promises. They're false.
That's right. Like we're Americans. We're professionals at lying.
Well, you are.
We're North Americans. Excuse me.
Okay.
You're not free from this, you son of a bitch.
And like we said at top, remember how we started this? Remember to tell a friend, become wary when something is too good to be true. So we keep making promises. But no. Had you got any feelings at the end of this?
Man, I like, obviously, like this is normal right up
feelings.
My alley.
Normal feelings.
Yeah, I was starting with normal feelings. Oh, okay. I figured I've like shown off my goonerness enough. Like we can move on. But no, I obviously like really enjoy like this kind of story. As a Warhammer lore fan as well. So because this is like fits into that vein, but
it's on the spectrum, baby.
It's really, this is a really fun one as far as with that, despite the fact of like how gruesome it is if you just look at it at base value. Because it's fun as far as seeing the like Elise's interactions as far as like actually bringing prey to herself so that she can sustain herself. Because like we read about it in the bio, but getting like the story version of that is nice. But it's also really fun because, you know, we get to actually see the written out story of one of the most beloved cards in Runeterra. So, you know, like this for me, this is kind of like, you know, an homage to like the last days of Runeterra, like pour one out for the boys here. And because now like that little hapless aristocrat, we got a name now. Poor Marcus. Yeah. Poor Marcus didn't know what hit him. He just wanted a piece. That's all he wanted.
And with that, as always, thanks for hanging around. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back soon for the next episode.
Take care, everybody.